This is Monica Passos for CQUT.
Stop putting your TV set on, please.
Doobie-doobie-doo. Bye-bye.
Hi, and welcome to Tita Talks. On today's episode, we're talking about something that has been really top of mind for me the last little bit as it relates to this podcast specifically, as it relates to content creation, making things on the internet, and just exploring hobbies now that I have all of this white space. And it's the concept of cringe and how lately I've been thinking about cringe as a colonial construct that is kind of perfectly designed to keep us small, to keep us from trying the things and doing the things and being this version of ourselves that is not, in my case, chained to a desk or that visual was a lot. But the fact is, if we're not dreaming, doing, trying, who's benefiting from that? And that's the question I've been sitting with for the last little bit. Before I get too far into it, I want to preface this by saying I am recording this episode from Tulum. So this would be episode 2 from here. And if you couldn't already hear or tell, there are noises happening in the background because today I felt called, to the dismay of the sound engineers who I love so very much, and thank you, sound engineers, to the dismay of our sound engineers. I'm recording outside on a balcony. So, you know, a lot of times already on this podcast, I've talked about how I'm not trying to chase perfection in these things. And again, perfection is also one of those tools to keep us small. But yeah, today we're kind of just creating with the spaces and noises and who knows, messages that are happening outside. So you might hear a bird, you might hear a car pass by, which is not my favorite. We'll try to pause if I hear a car. But you might hear some nature sounds in the background, water, birds. It's a really lovely morning, actually. It's really early in the morning. We're just starting the day. The sun's starting to come up. So I hope wherever you are as you're listening to this, you are also having a nice time. Okay, let's get into it. So I think to start, I need to invite you into my brain when it comes to what I think cringe is, what makes me feel cringe, why this topic matters, or why we should even talk about it at all. But for me, cringe shows up as like just this full body embarrassment, even sprinkle in a little shame, a little guilt around an activity. And a lot of times I feel like it's rooted in this background thought that's happening, almost like a program that's running in the background that is saying things like, ew, like who do you think you are doing this activity? Or I don't think you're good enough or polished enough to do this thing that you want to put out into the world. Like, what makes you think you can just do that? Like, that is the sludgy internal dialogue that's happening around that. And I honestly, I don't feel a ton of cringe when it comes to posting content type things on the internet. Like, Instagram, you know, they just added that flip side feature. And I just wonder, like, what would I even put on my flip side? Like, I don't have a lot of reservations around like what happens on that, so that's great. But the thing that I'm feeling cringe on these days is when I got to Tulum, I was like, okay, I am going to set a big goal for myself, make myself uncomfortable, do something that's not what I usually do. And sadly for me, that activity is drawing. Like, I've never given myself the space or time to explore art in that way. Like, again, my background is very corporate. I spent the last like 10, 12 years in very corporate settings. And at some point, this young version of me just stopped doing art. Like, when I was young, I can very clearly see myself have memories of, like, drawing all of the time and making stuff. I was so crafty. And isn't it just so sad to think that one day I was like, all right, I guess I'm done with that. I gotta go be a grown-up now or learn a useful skill. And, oh my gosh, there's actually a ton to unpack right there. But anyways, I made the decision to challenge myself, and that was drawing. So I bought this little sketch pad, I have markers, and I've committed to drawing something every day, which actually does make me really uncomfortable. And it's not meant to be good, it's not meant to be seen by anyone, but I actually am posting them on Instagram, mostly for my own accountability. That's like going to the gym or anything. Like, I just feel a certain level of accountability when I'm sharing these things with people. I do think the journey of just starting to explore these things where I feel like I've never given myself the time or space is very healing. And I feel like the messaging back to myself when I spend an hour drawing a tree is, oh, I can actually slow down for an hour to do this activity and I'm safe to do so. I think there's lots to talk about when it comes to that word of safety, like feeling safe to slow down. When I reflect back on my own experience of how I would spend quote unquote free time and how I had certainly been conditioned to feel like having hobbies or using my free time for something that is not productive in a capitalist sense, that I should feel guilty for spending that time that way. And actually, the way that that's kind of coming to my mind right now is I often feel bad for having or enjoying free time, not necessarily just having free time, but enjoying my free time, knowing that members of my family use their free time by working a second job. And I've certainly been that way too. There hasn't been a ton of time in my career, maybe just up until the last couple of years, where I decided not to do two jobs. And yeah, I very much come from a family of everyone works incredibly hard. Everyone works 2-3 jobs. And I've had a lot of guilt around being able to just like have a hobby that isn't bringing in income. Like I feel like I've definitely monetized my hobbies because of this. And not to say today that like if I were to turn to any of my family members today and be like, hey, I'm gonna spend 2 hours drawing whatever or making art, that they would shame me for that in any way. That actually they'd probably very much encourage that. But it's the programming, right? Like this idea that like, oh, I can't slow down, like we need to make money, we need to do stuff. It's this capitalist programming. So in my work of divestment in capitalism, like it's very hard to undo that or unlearn those things because I feel bad. I feel bad about not doing stuff, not making stuff, not being productive in a capitalist sense. It's actually also kind of sad to think about all of the things I had maybe in the past not participated in because I felt like there wasn't time to honestly like dick around. Like there's no time to dick around. Like I need to be working, I need to be making money. And something that I probably saw in Brown Girl Therapy is this idea that children of immigrants, obviously brown kids, have this almost like underlying shame and guilt around having hobbies that aren't monetizable or like, again, productive in a capitalist sense, because the reference point for free time, again, we don't really have a good one. And it's also this, for me, this idea that something I'm trying to unlearn and unprogram from is this, I almost want to label it like survival what's the word I'm looking for? Like, not survivalist guilt, but this, like, my entire family uprooted their whole lives to immigrate to Canada so that I could be born there and have all these opportunities. So how could I then spend my time not being quote-unquote successful in their minds, right? Like, everything I do, all of the time that I'm spending, I guess, all of the free time that I have needs to be spent almost like repaying that debt. But the funny thing about trying to do that is that I'll never get there. I will never get there, not in my own mind. Like, the thing that I'm up against is so big in my head, but then also non-existent at the same time, if that makes sense. So the reason I'm sharing this is I'm trying to describe what this full body cringe feels like. And yes, there is a layer of, like, the surface level layer is this embarrassment or feeling like, oh, I can't participate in stuff because I might not be good at that thing that I'm trying to participate in. So there's that. But I do think, like, the deeper levels to that are really rooted in this, like, guilt and shame around the enjoyment of, quote, frivolous things, right? Like, I even think about the way that I was spending my time in my 20s. And, you know, I had a full-time job. I had just graduated from university. And outside of the full-time job, I was volunteering for volunteer boards that were very much resume builders, or working a second job or whatever. And I think I had convinced myself that I was enjoying those things because my career was so important to me, but I didn't have any hobbies. Like, I used to dread the question, like, what do you like to do for fun? Because I didn't really have anything that I was interested in outside of my career. Like, I wasn't going to dance class like I was a couple of years ago, or taking time to bake and cook a meal, and now drawing, I guess, too. But I actually used to dread that question of, like, so what do you do for hobbies and what do you do for fun? And mind you, those questions were always coming to me in very corporate spaces, so I also felt the need for that answer to be somewhat polished. Like, I couldn't be doing some some silly little activity, right? Like, yeah, so it's a very, again, like, layered thing, this feeling of cringe. But the way that I am reframing cringe in my mind. Okay, so we've talked a bit about cringe. All of the layers of it, but the way that I am now, I will just believe that any hobby or task or art that is not actively contributing to that machine is a waste of my time. And that is literally what I thought for so many years of my life. And now I'm just like, I am so, so not about that. I'm really divesting from this idea that I am a machine for capitalism. Like, I'm not a machine. I am a person. And we should probably do art and hobbies and things that bring us happiness and joy. Like, when you say it out loud, it's actually ridiculous. It's actually ridiculous. So I kind of feel like these days I am actively seeking out things that make me feel cringe. And I'm actually trying to welcome this feeling of cringe, because when I feel these levels of embarrassment or, like, oh, something in my body is like, oh, this is new, this is different. And not in, like, a bad, like, trying to warn me out of it kind of way, but like, oh, this is a new experience for us. Like, that uncomfortableness, I'm actually trying to actively seek that out because I have been very good at not doing that, not seeking out the things that make me uncomfortable, not pursuing hobbies and interests outside of my career or outside of, again, something that is productive in a capitalist sense. And I do think it is a big part of this journey back to myself. So in the work of decolonization, in the work of, again, like divestment from capitalism, in this work of trying to understand my place in my lineage and create the environment, spaces, frames of mind to invite a certain level of ancestral remembrance, right? Like, I think there is a lot of wisdom that we carry, but we're just kind of asleep to it. In this journey of that, I think it is important to engage in these activities of cringe, do these things that are against our current programming in order to return back, right? Like, I've been thinking a lot about, like, what homecoming feels like, and that's, like, a physical return to home. That's one thing. I've been really thinking about what going back to the Philippines looks like. But then this journey back to home in my body, right? Like, I'm part of a kind of a book club, book study club right now called Puksuya, and we're reading a book together, and some of the, like, a new concept for me that's been introduced to me through that group is the idea of long body, and I think it's actually either Dr. Lenny or Dr. Lily who introduced that. I'm sorry, I don't have my notes right in front of me, so maybe I'll put the credits in the show notes or something, but this idea of long body, that our long body remembers, and long body includes not just the physical body that you're in, but it includes kapwa, it includes nature, it includes your ancestors, like long body, right? So I do think this journey back to self, this decolonization work, this call it whatever you want, I do think it's important for us to explore these things that are outside of what our current programming is, because that's the work of unlearning, right? I think it's also important to invite, for myself at least, to invite community into those things, right? So I don't necessarily mean like, oh, I'm gonna draw something and show you, but there, for me, what makes it stick, I think, or what makes it more impactful is to do those activities in community, like however that looks like for you. So I really am so thankful for these community spaces, like Ka'arten in Montreal. Like, they do probably monthly-ish workshops where everyone just sits and does art together. That is so beautiful. That's, I just think we're meant to do things in community that way. And for me, again, that's like, okay, we can get the reps up and practice on our own, but I think what makes it stick is doing the work together, right? I am not on this journey alone. You are not on this journey alone. Like, we can lean on each other in these times. And I actually also think that there are certain things that are meant to be more communal. The last kind of point that I want to make around cringe, engaging in cringe, actively seeking out cringe, is for me, one of the other benefits of that, outside of what we've already talked about, like the unlearning and the decolonization work, is for me, service to community and creating space for community to gather is a really important part of the work that I want to engage in. And I do think that there needs to be a certain level of self-care that happens in order to be, I don't even want to say effective, because that sounds so, like, so corporate, like, I'm an effective community organizer. It's not even that. It's like, an inspired community organizer, a healed community organizer, a enthusiastic community organizer, in order to be those, like, fill in the adjective with whatever it is. There is a certain level of self-care that has to happen, and that is in these, like, seeking out of hobbies and things that are interesting and things that just inspire a different way of thinking, or of, I don't know, using my brain or hands in a way that I don't normally use them, right? There is something about, like, the novelty of that, and then also, again, this, like, messaging back to self of, like, oh, I am worth this time. Like, I value myself enough to explore these things that interest me, right? Instead of just doing the thing that I think I'm supposed to do or have to do because I need to be a valuable contributing member of this society. Like, no. I really like the idea of doing art as a message of self-care and understanding self-worth within my own self. And through that, again, it makes me better at the things I want to do, because it's like that messaging and self-confidence comes through the work that you want to do. I also just want to apologize because I know at some point, like, a pool or fountain has turned on, so now you're getting these serene water noises in the background. Like, we're just rolling with it. So I'm sorry for all the background noise, but I'm not, because I'm kind of into it. I kind of like it. Okay, the thing that I wanted to talk about is, yeah, it makes me better at those things. And honestly, it probably, I don't even know if directly, maybe directly someday, but indirectly does inspire the work. Allows me to be more creative in the ideation of things that I want to do in community. And I do think that through your cringe, you will inevitably create something that the world needs. So I have been saying this, I don't know, for a long time, and maybe I've already said it on this podcast, but do your ideas. The world needs your ideas. Again, in this, like, who told you the thing that you want to do or say or share is cringe? Like, who told you, and who benefits from you believing that those things are cringe, right? Like, I often think about who benefits from me playing my talents small, right? Like, not playing big with my talents. And I don't think that I win in that scenario. I don't think that the community that I want to serve wins in that scenario. I just think that, again, this me as a machine in capitalism is the thing that wins when I believe that the stuff that I'm actually called to do, the things that light me up and excite me and interest me, inspire me, those things, I'm not the one who wins if I buy into that thought that those things are cringe and that I shouldn't participate in them. And yeah, the system is designed so perfectly for us to feel like we can't participate. Even this podcast is truly an act of cringe, because even just getting set up on the audio, like, this audio quality today is probably not great. And I feel like every single episode I bring up this thought or idea that, like, okay, this is not meant to be perfect. Like, I'm saying it to myself, okay? Like, that is not a report back to you. That is me talking to my own self, like, this doesn't have to be perfect. Like, let's get the reps in. This is going to be something that you're going to be very thankful that you started, you know, 100 episodes from now. But right now it is so cringe. I feel so cringe doing this podcast. I'm not even over-exaggerating right now as I say it out loud. But the fact of the matter is, like, the podcast is a way for me, and eventually us, once I start bringing guests in, to take up space with our stories, and that to me is more important than my own cringe. So if that inspires you to participate in the things that make you feel cringe, or to reframe the things that feel cringe in your mind, that would make me so happy. Please share with me the things that you are doing right now that make you feel cringe, because I love to see it and love to be a cheerleader of it, because I know that these things are easier with the encouragement of your friends. So, that's a bird. So we're gonna call that the end of the episode, and I'll see you on the next episode of Tita Talks.
It took one look, then forever lay out in front of me. One smile, then I died, only to be revived by you. There I was, thought I had everything figured out. Goes to show just how much I know about the way life plays out. I take one step to find myself coming back to you, my one and only, one and only you. Ooh. Now I know that I know not a thing at all, except the fact that I am yours, and that you are mine. Oh, if they told me that this wouldn't be easy, take one step away, then I find myself coming back to you, my one and only, one and only. I take one step away, of coming back to you, my one and only, one and only you.
Magandang hapon sa inyong lahat. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jemarvin Reyes. I am a youth leader and community organizer here, bringing you Ipanoy News back home in the Philippines. The article is from the Inquirer with the title, Marchers, EDSA Celebration, Does It Depend on the Government? We Are People Power. Two rallies were held here on Sunday to mark the 38th anniversary of EDSA People Power Revolution that ousted then-President Ferdinand Marcos Sr. from power. About 100 Federation of Urban Poor in Negros, or FEDUP, members staged a protest to call for freedom from the deceit of what they described as a shams people initiative to change the constitution. The demonstration was held in front of the statue of former Senator Benigno Aquino at Araneta Street. We insist on celebrating EDSA despite of its not being declared as a holiday, FEDUP provincial head Joy Jarabello said. Its celebration doesn't depend on the government, but on us. We are EDSA People Power, she explained. The protesters said the deceit is happening supposedly in the guise of changing the economic provisions of the 1987 Constitution, when the motive is really political. To deserve this freedom, FEDUP refuses to forget a historic event in Filipino lives that brought freedom and democracy back to life in 1986, she said. Now that freedom and democracy is wanting, given deceptions done by our legislatures to change the constitution, Jarabello pointed out. We have lost the freedom and democracy during the Duterte administration with the massive killings and corruption, she recalled. We are again faced with deception by the current administration, she observed. EDSA People Power was never a failure. It is instead the leaders whose vested interests are beyond satisfaction who failed and are trying to kill the values of EDSA, Harapelio lamented. At Bacol Public Plaza, about 500 protesters joined a rally to keep the spirit of EDSA People Power Revolution alive. Bayan Negros chairperson Jimmy Loplip said the assembly was also a stage to oppose charter change. San Carlos Bishop Gerardo Alminaza, in a statement released at the event, stressed the need to keep the spirit of EDSA People Power alive to ignite our unity to rise once more. EDSA People Power Revolution 38 years ago was a day for the Filipino people to rise in hope for a more peaceful nation, he said. Today, the nation is again under threat with moves to amend the constitution, he warned. The article was written by Carla Gomez and published on February 25, 2024. Thank you so much for listening. Maraming salamat sa pakikinig. Once again, this is Gemma Vin Reyes, delivering you Philippine news from abroad.
Akala nyo ba ang kapangyarihan ay nasa inyo? Sino ba kayo? Di naman kami nagkulang sa aming pag-uunawa.
We are from Radio Kapwa, which is based in Montreal. Our show airs from 2 to 3 p.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM. Mabuhay, this is Veronica, one of the hosts of Radio Kapwa. And we are actually live here at POB, Pinoys in Parliament, an annual youth congress from in Canada, organized by Kabangka. And we are in a round table with a very diverse voices from the Filipino diaspora here in Canada. And our mic is tabbed with a Play-Doh.
Yeah. The theme is Laro.
This week is Laro, so, our mic is stabbed with a Play-Doh. But we've been having great conversations lately, and I think this conversation will benefit a lot of our kapwa, like our kasama, from not just from the delegates here right now, but for those who's listening to us from Radio Kapwa and even from Radio Migrante, right? So,
hi, everyone. What time does your radio show off?
2 to 3 p.m.
2 to 3 p.m. Magandang hapon sa lahat ng nakikinig sa Radio Kapwa. We're whispering a little bit because we're in the chill zone, but usually my radio voice is a little bit louder.
Yeah.
Keep it down. My name is Wayne Smalalang, and I am one of the hosts and coordinator of Radio Migrante. We are a community radio show based in Toronto. We amplify the voices of marginalized community. We have been interviewing migrant workers, peasant farmers in the Philippines, and international students. And watch out for our episode next week. We will be featuring Debenji and McKenna, who are the mother and daughter who were threatened with a deportation order in 2022, but they have pushed through. The community has fought together, and they were just granted PR status. So, yes, that's our community. And we're interviewing them for International Working Women's Day, so that's very cool.
And for those who's listening, that's not fake clapping, eh? We're actually clapping.
Yes. Let's hear it again. Yeah.
So cool. For you, what was the biggest catalyst or even the biggest incident that really made you push forward and also put your call to action to defend press freedom? Like, what was that even, like, news story?
So when I started Radyo Migrante, it was really to make sure that the voices of migrant workers, you know, international students, you know, marginalized people in our community are amplified and their issues are heard. But we started to really think about, we can't just, you know, retweet an information now as journalists. Adding context to it and analysis is very important. And then we started to hear about one of the community radio broadcasters in the Philippines. Her name is Frenchie May Cumpio. And there's a photo of her with this huge earphones. And I was thinking, and with like the radio mic, because she was also a radio broadcaster. And I was thinking that literally what I do, that's I also broadcast on radio. But she was arrested on trumped-up charges because she was the only person in Eastern Visayas who has been highlighting the human rights violation on farmers and workers. And so with her now behind bars for 4 years now, there has been a lack of, you know, information about how the people in Eastern Visayas are being exploited. And she was only 21 years old when she was arrested, and she just turned 25 in February. And it's just like, sometimes when, even when I'm doing an episode, I'm thinking, someone got arrested just by doing this, just by telling you know, the truth, the information about like my community. And even though in Canada there's a little bit more freedom to communicate, I knew that at some point, if I really am truly highlighting and exposing how Filipino workers are being exploited, how Filipino international students are being exploited in Canada, at some point I may also face that kind of repression. And you know, they come up in different ways too. So I really wanted to bring Defend Press Freedom here in Pinoy's in Parliament, where there are so many leaders in different sectors who will be not just in parliament but also community organizers to understand that there is this issue, not just in the Philippines but also here in Canada. And when there's a repression of information of media in the Philippines, how are we here in the diaspora are going to be able to get that information, the truth, what is actually happening in our country? And when I spoke with so many youth today, in the past 2 days, a lot of us are either still connected with the Philippines, like actually go back often, or have parents that go back often, or parents that are in the Philippines, or are reconnecting to the Filipino culture and, you know, history. So how do you even get the true history if they're revisioning history? And, you know, and closing ABS-CBN is such a big move because they took down all the posts that they've shared in the past. So how do you even get those information to the people again? So we proudly wore these T-shirts throughout the Pinoyism Parliament, and we really hope that we reach a lot of the youth from different parts of Canada, that this is an issue, and that if they're interested, there are resources from Radyo Migrante. And also, I know that Radyo Kapwa also covers some of this.
I have a question, actually. And this is just, I know, I have a question. I have so many questions. Quote me on that. Within your knowledge, are there safeguards for vulnerable journalists? Like, even here, especially in the Philippines. Parang, oh, my Tagalog. Like, I hate to say it, but it's always the same story. Like, either a journalist behind bars after speaking the truth. They're speaking their truth. How can we protect them if they're such vulnerable? Well, they're truth tellers, you know. We need them. I feel like that's like just a universal language. Like, that's the core oral tradition. How can we protect these truths. I really like your questions because I think it applies not only to journalists, but like community leaders. There are community student organizers that are also getting arrested for telling the truth about student issues. There are labor union workers that are also getting arrested, peasant farmers. So in the Philippines, it's a very big issue to just repress any kind of critical thinking and any kind of exposure of like human rights violations. How can we protect each other? Which is one of the reasons why I brought, you know, this issue here, because really your main protectors are your community. Even though Frenchie Mekungkio has been behind bars for 4 years now, there is nonstop campaigning for her to be released, or for her quote-unquote, you know, charges on her to be fast-tracked. Because if there is a case, then show it. If there are evidences, then show it. Put it into court. But they do this for many, many years now, and there's a lot of
process.
Yeah, because that is the tactic, is that you've been removed to that community.
Exactly.
So how do we protect each other? It's really just like getting to know your community, and for community leaders to also immerse themselves with the people, because that's your main protector.
How do you guys feel about, I know plenty of times, like such as the international court, they've tried, or especially other international peacekeepers, they tried to interfere and solve our problems. What do you guys think about that?
Well, if we think about our justice system, the question is like, do you think that they are fair? Do you think that they make fair judgments? And would you be confident if you are put to trial in the Philippines that you would be fair? You would be tried fairly. So independent investigations are definitely one of the big campaigns of progressive organizations on anything. Because if the government has control over, you know, different parts of this process or has influence, then can you really trust that, you know, judgment that they made? So there is always a call for independent investigation. And I know that the International Criminal Court can be one of those, but doesn't have to be the only.
Exactly.
You said that.
Sa pagtitingin lang natin, sana ay di na magwakas itong awit ng pag-ibig. Awit natin ay huwag na huwag mong kalimutan. Pangako ko naman na lagi ka pakikinggan.
All right, and we are back. You are listening to Radio Kapwa on 90.3 FM, CKUT, and we are at the midpoint of the week, as you can catch us every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. or online at the CKUT website, where you can just click the Listen Now link. If you didn't know, this is Fenny Cristo, one of the sound engineers here. Shasta Laura, also behind the boards. If you're just tuning in right now and you missed it earlier, we had Kat Daka with her monthly Tita Talk segment and our fellow Kapwa, John Marvin, with his weekly news update. But we also shared a snippet of a conversation we had just over a week ago in Ottawa with our Toronto counterparts, Radio Migrante. Shouts to them also, and extra love too, since I'm originally from Toronto. We had this impromptu convo when Santer Kapwa visited our nation's capital for Pinoys on Parliament, and it was a much-needed talk since we spoke about radio broadcasters being arrested back home in the Philippines for telling the truth, unfortunately. I know we'll be seeing Radio Migrante again in a few months in Toronto. I'm looking forward to it as another conference approaches. More info on that event coming soon. And speaking of events, mark your calendars as I run through what's coming up in the 514. Tomorrow, Thursday, March 7, catch Sanser Kapwa member Deanne Louise Cinardo providing a woodworking workshop for teens ages 14 to 17 years old from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at P10, which is at 10138 Rue La Jeunesse, Suite 301. For more information, visit their Instagram page at Fried Chicken Vixen and Queer Arts P10. Friday, the next day, March 8, a workshop on lesbian realities is organizing with the Centre de Solidarité Lesbienne at La Cerise, which is at 1575 Attican Street, starting at 6:30 p.m. A meal, STM tickets, and risk reduction materials such as condoms, lube, gloves, needles, etc. are available for free on-site. Procedural mask and physical distancing, which is about 1 to 2 meters, are strongly encouraged in this space. Hand washing is required also. For more info, visit their Instagram page at jeunesse.lambda and Solidarité Lesbienne at CSL_MTL. And that same evening, on Friday, March 8, at Centaur Theatre Gallery, catch our fellow Kapwa, Coco, perform starting at 7:30 p.m. and experience opulence in ambulance with Bakla. For more info, visit their Instagram page at Bakla_AF. The next day, Saturday, March 9, P10 will be offering a sewing magic series with V on Instagram nano.machina for teens ages 14 to 17 years old from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at 10138 Rue La Jeunesse, Suite 301. To register, visit their Instagram page at Queer Arts P10. Fast forward a few days. Tuesday, March 12, at P10 again, feel the music by learning how to write a song in this next workshop with Naika Champagne for teens ages 14 to 17 years old from 5 to 7 p.m. at 10138 Rue La Jeunesse, Suite 301. To register, you can visit their Instagram page at Queer Arts P10. That same day, Tuesday, March 12 again, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Vent Over Tea is excited to invite you to their intergenerational death cafe in partnership with the Yellow Door at the Yellow Door Hive, 3625 Aylmer, and facilitated by David Robinson. This unique event is designed to bring people together across all ages and from different walks of life to discuss the too often taboo topic of death in a safe and comfortable environment. For more info, visit their Instagram pages at VentOverTea and TheYellowDoor.org. So that was just for this coming week, but there's some other events to watch for in the next few weeks. March 15 to 16, Black Symposium Noir will be held at Maison de la Culture Côte d'Ige. This conference program features selected paper presentations and roundtables grounded in this year's theme, Black Radical Thought and Praxis in Montreal. Stay tuned to be in the know. The week after that, March 23, Black Mental Health Connection and Vent Over Tea are hosting Community Care as Power, an interactive panel and discussion exploring mutual aid as a form of community care through the lens of innovative local community organizations. Attendees will be invited to break into groups to reflect, connect, and engage in meaningful discussions. It will take place at Centre Culturel Georges Vanier, Salle des Jardins, which is at 2450 Rue Workman, on the second floor from 3 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. For more info, visit their Instagram pages at VentOverTea and BMHCMTL. And that's a wrap for the community announcements. I hope you heard something that interests you and you register for some of these events. And maybe you'll catch some Radio Kapwa people in attendance too. Don't be shy if you see one of us. Say hi. Myself, I might go to one of those Yellow Door events, as I've been wanting to check them out for a while now. But yeah, with that said, we are closing in on the end of our regularly scheduled hour. So for now, from Fanny Crystal, I'll say peace and love. And until next time, this was Radio Kapwa on 90.3 FM, CKUT, every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m.
Uncut. It contains strong language and some adult situations. Discretion is advised.
All the Way Live Radio, CKUT.ca 90.3 FM, every single Wednesday from 3 to 5. This is Pro V. Hope you enjoyed last week's show. It was DMX's first album. It was Dark and Hell is Hot from beginning to end. And then followed that with a part of his Drink Champs interview with Noriega and DJ EFN. And like I said last week, this week is going to be a DMX mix from beginning to end. Whole bunch of DMX tracks. It was tough putting it all together. So much music from his own albums to the Rough Riders stuff to soundtracks to features. A whole lot of good stuff. Tried to fit as much as I could.